We start today in Australia, where wildfires are burning out of control across the country. Temperatures have risen above 40 degrees Celsius. That's 104 degrees Fahrenheit in every state in Australia. The wildfires have killed 10 people since September. They've destroyed nearly 10 million acres of land. That's like two New Jerseys going up in flames. The Australian state of Victoria in the southeast is seeing some of the worst damage. And it's likely to get even worse, says Andrew Crisp. He's the Emergency Management Commissioner for Victoria.
This is a high-risk day for Victoria. This is a day we do not often see. Our state is dry. It is going to be very hot. It is going to be very, very windy.
Earlier, 35,000 people in the city of East Gippsland were told to flee. But as conditions got worse, Emergency Services spokesman Luke Hegarty said they should stay put.
Unfortunately, it appears that our concerns have been realised this afternoon. These fires have continued to grow, and now for a very large part of East Gippsland, our advice to people is that it is too late to leave. They need to be sheltering inside their homes. The fires are continuing to spread.
The sky just completely changed in colour. It just got darker and darker as fire got closer towards us.
Elise Kinsella is with the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. She was reporting from a centre for displaced families in East Gippsland.
The temperatures are still sitting around 40 degrees here and just really hot winds. And there are fires throughout eastern Victoria.
And throughout the entire continent. Around 100 wildfires are burning right now from the Northern Territory to the island of Tasmania. Australia's capital city, Canberra, hasn't been spared. People there have seen this kind of devastation before. As Kyle Vass reports from Canberra, there are still lessons to be learned.
In Australia, it's tough to get away from the fires. The city of Canberra has been transformed into a hazy, cough-inducing smokescape. People here still remember what happened back in 2003. The Australian capital was taken by surprise when strong winds shifted and suddenly residents looked up to see a nearby mountain completely ablaze. Liz Tilley says she had no idea how quickly the fire would arrive at her front door.
We said to the emergency services guy on the corner, what do we do? Because that's not far from us at all. And he said, go inside, close the windows and doors and wait till we tell you to evacuate. But the fire got so intense where we are that no one ever came back.
Tilley says she and her family found themselves trapped inside with no escape route, face to face with a wildfire that was consuming their house.
The noise was like nothing I've ever heard. It was like a beast trying to get into every tiny crack. If there was any crack, there'd be flames coming in.
When the roof started to cave in, Tilley and her family went outside, and somehow a relative's car had been spared. That's how they got away.
They called it a once-in-100-years fire, which seems laughable now, given what's happened in Australia.
Veteran firefighter and park manager Brett McNamara also lost his home in 2003. Now he's back out there, helping to fight this latest round of fires in New South Wales.
You don't think you're going to experience a 2003, you know, more than once in your life as a firefighter. And I've certainly been on the fire ground the last few weeks. We've been down the south coast there. And some of the devastation I've seen down there is just so much like 2003 all over again. It's almost like this is on steroids this time round.
McNamara has more than 40 years of firefighting experience. He says there is no doubt that climate change is making the current fire much worse.
I've seen a lot in terms of nature saying, you know what, things aren't normal. Things are starting to change. The frequency and the intensity of fires in the last 15 years has ramped right up.
Drought conditions are the problem, McNamara says. They create highly flammable fuel loads in the forms of dead grass, trees, leaves, and twigs. To explain what he means, McNamara takes me out to Namadgi National Park, where he works, to show just how dry the bushlands are right now.
Many years ago, I had a chappie who worked out here, and he used to talk about the cornflakes crunch factor. So think of cornflakes as you pour them into your bowl. And what do they make? That noise they make.
It's snap, crackle, pop.
Yeah. Right. So what we have here at the moment, it is so dry that the cornflakes crunch factor underfoot is almost at extreme. And all you've got to do is just walk through where we are here to understand how dry it is. So let's just go for a walk here.
As we walk through the eucalyptus trees, the floor of the bushland is covered in brittle tree bark and dead leaves. Brett offers me a handful.
So you've got to pick that up and just snap that. Even with kookaburras laughing in the background. You get a sense for how dry it is.
According to Oliver Costello, climate change is a part of what's going on here, but it's not the whole story.
The reality is it's because the land's being mismanaged.
Costello is the head of a group called Fire Sticks, a network of indigenous communities that work to incorporate their cultural knowledge into Australia's land management policies.
Most Aboriginal communities were displaced from their cultural landscape, so they were moved into missions or reserves, and now we've got huge swathes of land that don't have people looking after them anymore.
Costello says the Western approach to land conservation can be counterproductive.
I really love national parks, but a lot of national parks are just really under-resourced and under-managed. And because the Western mindset is just sort of like put a fence around it and stop people from being in there and wrecking it, and it just doesn't work.
Indigenous land management means getting people onto protected lands, not just keeping them off. And for many Indigenous people, there's a cultural knowledge that burning the ground is essential to regenerating life in Australia. But Costello says the Western ways are geared towards avoiding fire at all costs.
One of the first things kids learn, oh, don't touch that, it's hot. For us, culturally, it's the wrong learning, because it's don't be scared, understand. Like, if don't be scared, like, don't touch it. Know not to touch it. Like, it's a different way of thinking. Like, know that where you live in, if you live in fire country, you need to burn the country.
Periodic burning makes the land more fertile and prevents the buildup of flammable organic material, the cornflake crunch factor.
If you don't have a minor disturbance through fire, which is actually can stimulate growth and, you know, create different relationships between species, plants, animals and stuff. If you don't do that, all you're doing is letting the fuel build up and a big fire will come through, because the fires will come. This is the story of this place. Fire will always come. That's just when it comes. And so our law is about us putting the right fire in at the right time, you know, so that it's not the wrong fire at the wrong time, which is what we're seeing now, you know.
Adopting Indigenous burn practices might be the key to preventing the kinds of fires that are raging in Eastern Australia today, says Justin Leonard. He's with Australia's Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization.
And I guess the question is, how do we find the workforce to step up and maintain that?
Oliver Costello, who's from an Indigenous family himself, says people from Aboriginal communities are ready and waiting to take more responsibility, and that Australia just needs to decide to look closer at its past to secure the future. For The World, I'm Kyle Vass, Canberra, Australia.